You're listening to The Point. We are discussing teen dating violence and efforts locally to teach teens about healthy relationships. With us is Autumn Zarandow. She's Director of Child and Teen Services at Independence House, and Bob Ravenel, a counselor, advocate, and trainer for youth programs at Independence House. National statistics say 1 in 11 girls, 1 in 15 boys experience physical abuse in romantic relationships. And you said that does sort of compare to what we're seeing here. Mm-hmm. How about the LGBTQ teens? Are they experiencing dating violence at the same rate?
I would say yes, and actually even a bit more, because they are more at risk with things that are going on at home, and also the abuse isn't necessarily identified in the LGBTQ community. Some areas that they would be focusing on is someone might be threatening to kind of tell other people that mm-hmm. they're a part of the community when they haven't necessarily told themselves, or refusing to call them by their preferred pronouns in an abusive way.
Yeah. The other young woman we heard from at the top of the show, Christina, talks about witnessing domestic violence as a child. So what are the links between children who witness domestic violence eventually becoming victims or abusers themselves?
I would say that violence in the children's home really sets the stage for problems in future relationships for the teens. If there are no interventions for them, when they have experienced dating violence themselves in high school, they are at higher risk to experience dating violence at the college level and into adulthood. Mm-hmm. So it does affect them lifelong.
And so we heard Christina talk about the fact that she went from one bad relationship to another, even though, I mean, that was something she witnessed as a child. It was sort of like, okay, that's just the way it is. In her mind, maybe that was normal. Even when she seemed to figure out that's not a healthy, normal relationship, she seemed to have some difficulty, thinking that she was worth that. And I just wondered about how that plays in, that insecurity that especially young girls may feel.
Well, it's the insecurity, but it's also the norms. Mm-hmm. You know, part of our training is to change societal norms. She said, you know, men hit women. Mm-hmm. That's a norm in her environment. And those are the things that we're trying to change so that people understand that, no, that is not the norm. That's not the norm that's acceptable. And the norm that's acceptable is that we respect women, that we respect our partners, that we have healthy relationships. So that's a lot of the work we're trying to do. But if that's what you've been exposed to and that's what you understand the norm, to relearn that, it's a challenge.
Yeah. Which is not just girls that are abused. I mean, there are boys who are abused by girls, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
There are. And you know, whenever we do the training, we talk about domestic violence and sexual violence. We do it really from a heterosexual perspective. And oftentimes, men especially get upset about it because it does happen. It happens in same-sex relationships. It happens with women against men. But the vast majority of it is male against female.
So what besides witnessing domestic violence as a child, what are some of the other risk factors?
I mean, that would include getting involved early in relationships, dating, starting to date earlier, substance abuse, alcohol abuse.
I would say low self-esteem, mm-hmm. having few friends, like you had mentioned, exposure to violence in their homes. Yep. And really any adverse childhood experiences where there's abuse, neglect, and household challenges. And these are risk factors that contribute to teen dating, but they might not be a direct cause. Right. So even though someone is at risk, they might not experience teen dating violence.
So what are the behaviors in teens that could indicate that they're being abused? You know, if you're a parent or a grandparent listening now, what are you looking for?
So abuse has many different faces. I would say with physical abuse, it's important to pay attention to if there's hitting, kicking, forceful grabbing. Emotional abuse is name calling, put downs, insults, bullying, intentionally embarrassing you, shaming you, or isolating you from your friends or your family. Sexual assault and abuse is forced sexual encounters or taking sexually explicit photos without consent. Stalking is harassing or threatening, showing up unannounced or keeping track of whereabouts. And now there's digital abuse, so controlling who your partner is friends with online or posting negative comments about them.
Yeah, and that was something it seemed to we heard in both was that isolating you. That's a really big one, right? Mm-hmm. Isolating you from your family and friends. Yeah. So absolutely. If that starts happening, that's a big red flag.
Absolutely. And then you think about it from the person's perspective. When things start going bad, where do they go? Because no one is there. So it's really a challenge. You know, one of the things that I believe was in Christina's, when she was saying, she was talking about talk to me. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that, you know, we really encourage parents and guardians, coaches and mentors, and that is to talk about these issues with the students and do it in a non-judgmental way, you know, so that they can come forward and say, you know, this is what's happening, so that they can feel they have a safe place to go to discuss these things. What we do know is that the students are listening. We encounter that in our counseling sessions where they really want to talk about what's going on. But oftentimes people aren't ready or don't feel capable to have those conversations.
Yeah. Wondering, I think everybody probably knows someone who in their life who they've said, why does he or she always go for the same, you know, in these this toxic relationship? They seem to go from one to the other. And if you happen to have a teen who's going down that path, how do you help them understand that they are deserving of better than that kind of a relationship?
That's a big question. And I think it is by having that conversation. I think we can all remember back to when we were teens, and when we were told to do something, we generally did the opposite.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So it's really engaging them in that conversation to say, you know, what do you like? You know, what do you like about your relationship?
Right.
And asking them some pointed questions, because, you know, they're smart and they can figure it out. But we've got to really ask them the questions and empower them to make the decisions. I mean, sometimes, you know, they bring home a boyfriend or girlfriend and, you know, the family loves them.
Right.
But they don't know what's going on behind closed doors. How then do you go and say, oh, by the way, so-and-so is not who you think he is?
Right.
So I think it's really having open, honest, and non-judgmental conversations.
I think it's a key word there is non-judgmental,
yeah,
right? Because
yeah.
if they feel like you're on their side rather than you're, like you said, lecturing, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, and I think also it's important to really focus on the behavior versus forbidding them to see that person, really, like what Bob had said.
Mm-hmm. It can be scary, too, if you've got, you know, I think it was Sarah who said, Christina who said that the best friend came and threatened her, you know, threatening your life. That's a scary situation. Even if you go home and tell your parents, you know, we know that restraining orders are taken out, and many times restraining orders are broken. So that can be a really scary situation to be in.
Yeah.
So what kinds of supports are available then for teens who have experienced abuse and want to come forward and get out of a situation like that?
So at Independence House, we offer individual counseling at our different offices. We have one in Hyannis, Falmouth, Orleans, and Provincetown. We also have group counseling at a few identified community locations focusing on healthy relationships. We have social media pages to help educate them to identify when abuse is happening on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. And we also have a blog for our teen page, which is at ihteens.org. And we try to connect with teens through social media and through technology. So we have a chat within business hours so that they can reach out to one of our counselors to ask any questions or to schedule an intake. And we have a text line, too, so they can text us.
Yeah. I'm talking about all the whole digital stuff. How does social media, music, all of that, how does that provide good or poor relationship models?
Yeah, I mean, I think it definitely provides both, and it's so important to have conversations about what we're watching and what we're hearing. So there's a profound influence on teens with relationship models, and there's times when we're not challenging or calling attention to why the behavior is unhealthy, and this can really lead teens to be desensitized to this and potentially to experience similar violence that's being depicted. So.
And I would say those, again, I'm going to keep circling around to the conversations. You know, that's one where you're sitting and you're watching a show or you go to a movie simply asking a question. Well, what do you think about that? And one thing we find that's really helpful is asking, you know, what do you see happening at school? You know, what are your friends encountering? Because oftentimes what you'll find is they may be telling you what about their friend or what's happening at school, but it may actually be happening to them. Mm. But it's safer to talk about someone else's experience. So I think it's continuously going back and saying, well, what did you think about that behavior there, that relationship? And I think you're going to get a better sense of, you know, what the student is thinking.
Yeah. I'm just thinking this trend of, you know, the selfies in the bathroom mirror, mm-hmm. which all the kids, and I was looking at a thing on Facebook that was talking about how kids are trying to make themselves look older. Like it was a girl who, she had pulled her top over her knees. So it looked like she had, you know, this buxom, you know, breast, but where really she was like 12 or something. Yeah. And, you know, you can see how these kids are potential victims to, you know, we hear about kids who go to meet somebody at a mall or, you know, how do we let our kids that are at that kind of age know that these dangers are out there? Again, I was going to go back to conversations, right?
Yeah,
it is. How young do you start those conversations?
I don't think you can ever be too young to start those conversations. Mm-hmm. I think how deep you get into it is different, but the younger you start having the conversations, the more of a trust that you build. And again, for people who are looking for resources, there are some great websites that provide great information. One is Massachusetts. We have a Respectfully page. You can go there. It's a campaign that was started, has some little videos talking about relationships and behavior. There's respectislove.org. Loveisrespect.org. It's one that I go to regularly because it has great information on it. Mm-hmm. And then another great site is the One Love Foundation site that has videos, has conversation pieces. You know, you just talked about the selfies. They did a whole thing about, you know, behind the Instagram pictures. You know, that's what you see, but this is what could be going on back there. So for parents and guardians and others who don't necessarily feel confident in having those conversations, there are resources out there that can provide you some information, give you some conversation starters to have.
And I guess one of the other things I think that surprised people is why it takes so long for people to walk away from a relationship. I mean, we get it, but that's, I guess another thing is maybe fear is a big part of that.
Absolutely.
It could be. Yeah, I think fear is a big part. I think, too, a cycle of abuse is believing that you're not worth kind of being in a relationship with someone that respects you. And it really is not unusual for survivors of abuse to continue to have loving feelings towards the person initiating the abuse. Mm. They may leave the abuser and return multiple times, and it doesn't mean that the violence didn't occur or that safety is not a concern for them.
Yeah. And as we heard when that Sarah, I think it was, finally informed the authorities, that's not a bad idea, right? Mm. Is to inform the authorities when something happens.
Yep.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Final thoughts?
Well, I think if one of the things that I would love to say, to have people know is that we're doing our survey, which is what's going on. So we encourage the middle schools and high school students to go to our website, ihteens.org, and we're doing a survey there. Last year, what we learned through that survey was when they're encountering these issues, who do they go to? 35% go to their friends, 47% go to their parents. So
that's encouraging,
right? Yeah. So this provides us good information. So we encourage people to take the survey and to use those resources.
Yeah. We'll post links with more information about teenage dating violence and programs through Independence House at our website, capeandislands.org. Autumn Zarandao, Director of Child and Teen Services at Independence House, and Bob Ravenel, Counselor, Advocate, and Trainer for Youth Programs at Independence House. Thanks so much for being here and
Thank
for the
you.
Work that
Thank
you do.
Thank you.
Coming up after a break, a conversation with Thomas Moakley, Democratic candidate for the State Senate seat for the Plymouth and Barnstable District. Welcome to The Point. I'm Mindy Todd. Later in the hour, we continue our conversations with candidates for State Senate seat for the Plymouth and Barnstable District. Today, we talk with Democrat Thomas Moakley. But first, domestic violence is something many of us think only happens between adults. For many people, physical, emotional, or sexual abuse in romantic relationships begins in the teenage years. Those who are abused or abuse are more likely to return to those roles as they mature. Today, we discuss efforts locally to teach teens about healthy relationships relationships and why those programs are starting with middle school students. Before we bring in our guests, we hear the stories of two young women who experienced abuse from their boyfriends. The abuse was witnessed and ignored by friends and even adults. Laura Sessions-Step, host of the podcast Sex Really, talks with Sarah first.
I met him at the back-to-school dance at the beginning of my sophomore year in high school. And at first, everything was great, just the typical, perfect romance that I had always wanted, that you see in movies. He wanted to spend a lot of time with me. We got to know each other really well and had a good time together. But he always had to be with me and always had to know where I was and who I was with, and really kind of took over my life.
Her boyfriend's attention started to feel isolating and controlling. Then one day at school, he got physical.
He threw me up against the locker and told me I would never be able to hide from him, so I shouldn't even try. I was scared and tried to run to class, but he followed me and slammed me into the classroom door. And my Spanish teacher pretended like she didn't know what happened. And just ignored everything. So I didn't know if I should do anything and how I should react to it.
On more than one occasion, Sarah's boyfriend pushed her around within plain view of teachers at school. But the high school, she says, did nothing. The abuse began to escalate until one night at a party, Sarah's boyfriend kicked her so hard she lost consciousness.
He hit me so hard that I was knocked unconscious. I have 6 hours missing from my memory from that night. And everyone told me that I was convulsing and shaking, but no one called the police because there were drugs and alcohol at the party and no one wanted to get in trouble. They put an ice pack on my stomach because I had a footprint, but let me lie there. And these people clearly were not my friends. So I called one of the guys on my crew team, and he came and picked me up and took me home. And the minute I got there, I told my parents everything. And we called the police, and they came over and took pictures. So the police went over to his house a couple hours later and took him to juvenile hall.
Sarah, who suffered a concussion and bruised ribs, thought she had done the right thing by informing the authorities. Her classmates, however, didn't see it that way.
That next Monday morning, I was ostracized. I, you know, was trying to protect myself and called the police, and I was hated by everyone who I thought were my friends and even people I didn't even know. My house got egged 4 weekends in a row, and his best friend came up to me and threatened my life. And I dropped out of my high school and never went back.
Our next guest tells us what can happen when violence in the teenage years is not stopped. Christina, like Sarah, was 15 when she met the young man who would become her abuser. It took her 6 years to leave that boyfriend and several more years with other violent boyfriends before she was able to walk away from it all for good.
The first time he was violent, probably when I was like 17, we were arguing in the car and he actually threw his cell phone at my face and my lip busted open. I was driving. I had to pull over. I ended up having to get like 4 stitches on my lip. I still have the scar. I mean, I think that was the first time, and it was really weird because it was like I felt more bad for him because I felt like he didn't mean to do it.
Was there anyone in school, like your teacher or a best friend, who sort of picked up on what was going on and said, hey, what can I do to help?
No, because I usually would like put ice packs on it and just like deal with the situation right away. And during this period, I lost all my friends because he was so controlling and didn't ever really want me to go anywhere. All I had really was just him.
One day, Christina and her boyfriend got pulled over. He handed her some crack cocaine and told her to hold it for him. She did, and ended up serving a 2-year prison term.
How did you feel about that finally? After you got in there, did you think you were stupid to take the rap for him, or were you still being loyal to him?
I think I realized that I was stupid, but I didn't have really a choice. By then, it was one of the situations where I was kind of like ready to go to jail. Like, I just wanted to get away. I'd come home and the whole house would be pitch black and I just knew something would be wrong and I'd almost get to the light and then he'd just like attack me until I was like on the ground and just start stomping on me. And so prison was like in a weird way, like a safe house. God. And that's really sad to say that because it was like my safe house when I got locked up.
One reason some victims tolerate dating violence is that they grow up in a home where hitting or punching seem, well, almost normal. This attitude of it's no big deal may also be shared by the bystanders who, in Christina's case, included her family.
Well, I was raised in an abusive home. My mother lived with an alcoholic. There's times where she would lock us all in one room and barricade the door, and you wake up in the middle of the night with him just pounding on the door before we had to go to school, and you'd just be looking at my mom, and she'd just be, like, sitting there. It became, like, normal to me. Like, that's what we dealt with. Like, men hit women, and you just deal with it. I mean, you're the stronger person if you could just deal with it. I mean, and probably a lot of kids' eyes right now, it's normal to them, too. The young girls that are dealing with probably the same things that I'm dealing with, they were probably raised up in this, so it's normal to them. A man, in a weird way, was like the guy who beat you up when he was mad and loved you when he was sad. Like, I don't know if that makes sense. Doesn't make sense still.
Today, Christina is enrolled in community college. Thanks to a criminology course, she is beginning to understand why she and so many people she knows suffer relationship violence. She's also organized a workshop on dating violence for teenage girls.
Me being in such a dysfunctional home, I have such a passion to help those kids out who just needed that conversation. And, like, I go to the juvenile center, and everybody's always telling them kids, like, they're wrong, and they're going to end up going to prison. But, like, when you have that one-on-one, it's like they just, they've got so many more other issues going on at home that is making them go run away, and it's making them fight, and it's making them go do drugs, and it's like they're trying to escape something. Like, I was always trying to escape, and my choice of drug, if you want to call it, was relationships. Like, I always got into the worst of relationships, and I didn't need to go to jail. I needed help. Like, I needed someone to help me, like, talk to me, tell me something, tell me why I was doing what I was doing, and I wasn't the only person. To the extent of what I've dealt with in my life, if I could tell somebody about my story just to help them with theirs, that's what I'm all about now.
That piece comes to us from an episode of the Sex Really podcast. Joining us in studio to discuss the reality of teen dating violence in our region and education and prevention strategies is Autumn Zarandow. She's Director of Child and Teen Services at Independence House. Good morning, Autumn.
Good morning.
And Bob Ravenel's a counselor, advocate, and trainer for youth programs at Independence House. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning, Mickey.
So before we talk about the piece that we just heard, help us bring us up to speed on the reality of teenage romantic relationships in the 21st century. What might surprise people to know about teenage relationships today?
Yes, thanks, Mindy. So the language around dating has changed. The word dating means different things to teens today than it did in previous generations. Dating today is typically reserved for having a serious relationship with another person. Other ways teens describe dating are talking, hanging out, or hooking up. For younger teens and older teens, the same words might be used but describe different behaviors. And also, the impact of technology on teen relationships is significant. Social media gives teens constant access to each other. This affects the way that they address conflicts with each other, and there's less face-to-face contact. And parents may be placing monitoring apps on teens' phones, but teens are so tech-savvy.
They know how to get around those,
exactly.
Don't they? Yeah, yeah. So are there more hookups versus longer relationships?
I would say so, yes.
Yeah. So are teens getting involved in romantic relationships at an earlier age than maybe we've seen in the past?
Yes, they have. And it's the way that they are happening is it becomes so fast-paced and intense that the teens are also perceiving like possessive jealousy and controlling behaviors as loving devotion. So it's getting very misconstrued.
So are teens more or less sexually active than maybe a decade or two ago?
I would say more so. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it was disturbing to hear the stories of the two young women who were abused by their boyfriends. And Sarah mentions that adults, teachers in her case, witnessed the abuse but did nothing. That piece was almost 10 years old. So I'm hopeful that now maybe schools have better training in place for teachers, coaches, and other adults Is that the case in our region?
It is. I think more people are recognizing the importance of getting involved. And when we're talking about addressing the issue, it really is twofold. Talking with students about healthy and unhealthy relationships, but engaging those bystanders. You heard the reference there to the bystanders. Sometimes the bystanders don't know how they can intervene. They think I need to intervene directly, but intervening may be calling someone else to help, to assist. You know, the other disturbing part that you heard was that the students didn't call for help because they were afraid of getting in trouble.
Right, yeah.
And we hear that a lot. So we need to, you know, let people know that if you do the right thing, we're going to take that into account.
Yeah. And we heard Sarah talks about being ostracized at school once she did make the abuse known to authorities. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty common is what you're saying, right?
It is. And that is part of what we're trying to have students understand. The folks that are doing these acts that are abusing people, they're the smaller part of our population. And this is across the board, but especially when we're talking about teen dating violence. The vast majority of people want to do the right thing. They know what the right thing is. And what we need to do is empower them so that they're able to step forward. They can recognize it and know how to seek assistance.
Do we have mandated reporting for teachers? I mean, if a teacher witnesses something like that, do they have to report it?
Yes.
Oh, so that's a good that's a change in the right direction, right?
Yeah. It is. It is.
All right. So tell us more about the training that you initiated with athletes at Dennis Yarmouth High School.
Yeah, we're really excited about that. You know, this really stems. There's a program called Mentors in Violence Prevention that was started around 1993 by Sport and Society up at Northeastern. And it was really gender-focused, more violence against women. But they've really expanded over the last 27 years. And they've expanded their program to address teenage and high school age. What we were doing was we were talking with Dennis Yarmouth High School, and we talked about putting in place training around the issues of sexual violence, domestic violence, and bystander intervention. And when we want to do something like this, we want to target a group that is influential in an area, in a community. And we looked at athletes as an influential part within the school, and also a part that we can contact easily through the department and through coaches. So we worked with the administration there, who I have to say has been really open and willing, recognizing the need to train their student athletes. And we worked in the fall with the fall athletes. We're going to work with the winter athletes. And then we're going to work with the spring athletes. Our hope is that we're going to put in place a program that year after year will continue to expand into different areas of education for the students. So by the time they graduate from DY, they will have a good understanding of all of these different aspects. Yeah. When we originally were working on this in June, we did a survey of all the student athletes, and we had over 30% that responded to it. And what we found was, in this area specifically, we asked the question, have you or someone you know experienced dating violence? 47% of the students responded yes.
Wow, yeah.
That's a significant number. And it correlates with what we see nationally and elsewhere.
Yeah. 866-999-4626 is our number if you'd like to join our conversation. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll talk more after a quick break.